burns, it does. Nothing burns like the cold, but only for a while. Then it gets inside you and starts to fill you up. And after a while, you don't have the strength to fight it. It's easier just to sit down or go to sleep. They say you don't feel any pain toward the end. First you go weak and drowsy, and everything starts to fade. And then it's like sinking into a sea of warm milk. Peaceful. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided to rebrand ourselves and relaunch at the same time the game did with a second edition. Each week we bring you a new dose of strategy, insight, and all-around geeky goodness. A huge thank you to Fantasy Flight Games, George R. Martin, and our patrons and fans. This wouldn't be possible without you. We have huge plans, and this year we get to enact those. We are going to be co-hosting Game of Thrones Nationals. Learn more at agotnationals.com. Also check out the community site at agot.cards, where you can find tons of community content and an event listing system.
Yeah.
I kind of can't believe we haven't used that in some form or another before. Now I recall where the plot "Nothing Burns Like the Cold" comes from.
Yeah, it's a good plot. I hate it. Not that way, but I almost end up always hating it. But yeah, it is good. Unfortunately, today we are talking about jacking out.
We are indeed here on episode 341 of the White Book with Scott and myself. It's a bit of a somber cast this week, and definitely probably a little bit of a different flavor than folks are used to. So we'll come back to that in just a moment. But on the plus side, the happy realm, we've got another of our patron giveaways. I want to thank all of our patrons for supporting us and helping make sure I can cover web hosting and a little bit of software for the cast. So that's pretty awesome of you. Anything past that, we're trying to turn into some cool little stuff for the community. So please do consider supporting us on Patreon as well. That said, I hit the random.org while Scott and I were pre-show chatting it up, and the winner of a full set of the sports team White Book house cards is Michael D. So I will be dropping those into the mail to you as soon as I can. Enjoy. Now to the somber news. Was this one that really hit you, Scott, or have you completely moved on from it?
No, I didn't completely move on. I still think mechanically Netrunner's my favorite game ever. Sorry, Thrones, but I played a cube a couple weeks ago. I still was somehow good at Netrunner, even though I knew like half the cards. I won the cube draft. So I still enjoy Netrunner and have a place in my heart for it. For those who don't know, what we were talking about with jacking out and in general in this cast is the end of Netrunner. And Also, what that means, how people can move to Thrones from Netrunner, and the similarities between the games we'll also get into. But Netrunner probably was the first major LCG success that FFG had, I would think.
I think probably so. I think the other games were definitely all on a smaller scale. As much as that pains me to say about Thrones, Netrunner definitely came out of the door with a bang and really seemed to strike a chord with a lot of people.
Yeah, I would agree there. The numbers that came out for Netrunner were definitely more than they came out for Thrones, but maybe we'll have some of them join us now.
Hopefully so. I mean, and of course, you know, Netrunner launched right as Thrones first ed was in its waning years, and things kind of flip-flopped back and forth. And, you know, Netrunner has gone through some definite growing pains. Recently, just hitting rotation, last fall, and getting a revised core set. It's very, very interesting to kind of see how FFG wound up tackling that. And I think in some ways points to this not necessarily being a planned ending point on FFG's part.
That certainly wasn't planned, but I think also we know that FFG doesn't think very far ahead in a lot of cases. I think partially because of the LCG model, making less money than a TCG, CCG type of model like Magic, they have less resources. Like most card games, there would be a designer and a developer, but there's basically one man running the show. In Thrones' case, Danny, for card games for FFG. So that's like an example of how they're saving money. And also, when you're saving money like that, forecasting and operational plans, also one man can only do so much. That would normally be a two-man job. Not that the designer developer will be doing that, but an operational job is the same thing. A lot of our complaints about OP, I think, also come from the same thing. They're understaffed and not planning ahead well because of the understaffed and lack of attention and caring about quality over cutting costs. For the immediate forecasting, obviously cutting costs helps, but if we had an increased quality in things like OP, which I'm not going to get into now, and other things that many other card games have, and planning ahead of planning too, then you might save money in the long run. Like if they realized that this might happen, they may not have made that revised core set and printed all those cards and made all that new art, which would have saved them boku dollars, obviously. So maybe this will end up being a lesson in that sense. But why did this happen is another question, because they obviously weren't planning for this game to go away like this.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a tricky one here. I mean, we've seen other LCGs come to an end before, right? We've seen actually quite a number of them so far. We've seen Call of Cthulhu, Warhammer Invasion, Warhammer Conquest, and the Star Wars LCG, and now Netrunner. The interesting thing I note out of all of these games that have been sunsetted in one way or another, they're all licensed games. They're all ones that that FFG had to work out with other people. Now, as far as I understand, Call of Cthulhu did not run into licensing issues. It just finally hit an unsustainable point from a player base perspective, because FFG still has that license that they're using on a bunch of other games. Same thing with Star Wars. From what I understand, it just wasn't sustainable. But obviously, FFG still does a lot of Star Wars games. But then that leaves us with the Warhammer stuff, Conquest and Invasion, and Netrunner, which were all licensed from other companies, other gaming companies. Now, I mean, FFG has the Android world, not necessarily the Netrunner name and mechanics, but that gets into a whole dicey gray area of IP, the copyright, patent laws, and things that I'm not a lawyer, not a huge expert on, and obviously some more of it would have to depend on exactly what was in FFG's contract. So FFG and WotC, that is. So who knows? Who knows on that front? But that's just me rambling about something interesting. So what, Thrones is the only other LCG left that's licensed? No, there's Lord of the Rings. There's Lord of the Rings. So
is L5R, they just own L5R now?
Yeah, they own it outright. They bought everything off of Alderac Entertainment Group, AEG. They did not just license it, they purchased it. Which I would say maybe does show some growth, some more forward thinking on FFG's part as compared to these other games. Maybe the influx of Asmodee backing allowed them to take a look at things and say, hey, let's...
This happened post-Asmodee?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure. But not 100% now. But regardless, I think probably shows some further planning, you know, that FFG looked at things and said, hey, instead of just licensing, let's just purchase it. Then we don't have to worry about any potential kerfluffle.
I think it's also different in the case that now we know Asmodee is looking to sell, right? So,
yeah.
Asmodee wasn't looking to sell at the time that they would have bought L5R. That wasn't on the table. Maybe it was in a long-term plan, but it wasn't something that was out in the public eye. And that says two things. Number one, the portfolio that Asmodee has on sale is greater with owning the full out rights to L5R, and or they were thinking more long term, and they were thinking they were going to stay as their own company and not sell. So I'm not sure if that says anything for what's happening right now. A lot of it depends, honestly, on what's happening with Asmodee. Like, this could have honestly been Asmodee is trying to, you know, cut costs as much as possible to look better on a balance sheet for a potential buyer.
It
came up for counter license renewal.
It's definitely possible. And, you know, as far as looking better to a potential buyer, I think that kind of brings me around to thinking about the other LCGs we've got that are licensed properties, or of course Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings. But those are backed by, like, huge kind of media empires, so to speak, that keep them in the public consciousness right now. Netrunner didn't have that pop culture push the same way. I mean,
well, if you're not a gamer, you don't know what Netrunner
is. Yeah, exactly. But folks know what Game of Thrones is now. They obviously know what Lord of the Rings is at this point. And so on the one hand, I can see things look a little awkward comparatively, because FFG has a more narrow license on those properties than they do, like, the Cthulhu Chaosium stuff, where they make all sorts of games. But, like, Thrones, I know, they basically just have the board and card game license. Like, miniatures and RPGs are done by actually two other different gaming companies. Same thing with Lord of the Rings, as far as I know. So maybe that looks a little weird, but they're also huge properties to say, hey, we have access to these if you're looking for a buyer. So,
oh, yeah, I don't think they're letting them go because of that. It means too much.
Yeah.
Unless Thrones or, well, I guess Song of Ice and Fire, George R. R. Martin, or whoever owns Lord of the Rings now comes asking for boku extra dollars, which seems out of George R. R. Martin's character in general. I don't think he would do that.
Agreed. And who knows? It may still even be worthwhile, because both of those are getting new boosts to keep them out in front of people, right? Amazon is forging ahead with this Lord of the Rings prequel TV show they're looking at doing. So that's bound to buoy this, you know, the sales of all Lord of the Rings related merchandise. Game of Thrones still has another season, and HBO just greenlit the pilot on one of the four different spinoffs they were looking at doing. So, like, those media companies are looking at keeping this out in front of people, which is, I think, only to FFG's benefit.
Oh, I agree. And most of the potential buyers are also video game people that have ins to places like GameStop or something. And if you put Game of Thrones, the board game, or Game of Thrones, the card game on a desk at GameStop by the shelves, someone will buy them once in a while. And that's something that would be attractive to those potential buyers.
Yeah.
Same thing with Lord of the Rings.
I could definitely see that.
It wouldn't have been the case with Netrunner. It's just the way it is, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But anyway, on the positive news, Netrunner people, come join us. Come play Thrones.
Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit and find out how and why you made that jump. Because you made it, obviously, at this point a couple years back.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I came to Thrones at first thinking it was my casual game just because a bunch of friends of mine were playing it. And the community is more what got me. So one thing I will say, very different than Thrones and Netrunner, is Thrones community, people are much more like real friends than in Netrunner. Not like people didn't make real friendships in Netrunner, but Netrunner, all you ever talk about with anyone in Netrunner is the game for the most part. And you only really see each other in tournaments. You don't really go out after that much. And this is a huge generalization, obviously. And I know, especially in the UK, it's very different in Netrunner. But in New York, that was mostly the case. Thrones is kind of the opposite, where like people take the game seriously and people talk about the game a lot and test a lot. But also their friends, like people have been – I wasn't at your wedding, obviously, Will. I didn't know you then. But right. Sure, Thrones people were part of your wedding party.
Yeah, and I was going to mention that just briefly. Yeah, fully half of my groomsmen and about half of the attendees at the wedding were all Thronesers.
Yeah, so Thrones is much more of a family thing, which I think is what really brought me to this side. And honestly, at that point when I moved, Thrones was not half as good a game as it is now. Through the smaller card pool and rules things, and just basically they were trying to get their feet with the new design for 2.0 and how things would work.
So you moved right after the 2.0 launch then?
More or less. I don't know. I didn't think it was like my serious main game until a while after. Like, I became really good friends with people like Roy and Aaron and whoever else, and that more is what swayed it. But the game has gotten so much better and is so much deeper. And now we're getting Shadows, which makes the game even more like Netrunner than it ever has been.
Yeah, I think it's definitely an interesting addition. And one I want to talk about more, but one I might suggest we come back to in a moment. Because I was kind of thinking I might inquire a bit about what like your top handful favorite things about Netrunner were. And then maybe we can kind of explore. I mean, obviously, like, I hate to break the news to everyone, but Netrunner is such a unique design. No game is really.
Yeah, I agree. You know,
capture that same.
That's kind of why I feel like losing Netrunner is a huge loss, because no other game is like Netrunner.
Yeah. But at least I was thinking maybe if we talked a little bit about some of your favorite aspects of Netrunner, then we could sidestep over to Thrones and kind of say, okay, well, does Thrones capture some aspect of that? Capture it really well? Not capture it at all? That kind of thing. Kind of talk what analogs are available.
Yeah. So I think first of all, the thing a lot of people listen to Thrones. Or listen to our Thrones people, obviously. So first, we should give a very basic understanding of what Netrunner was or sure. is. So Netrunner, in essence, is a first of all, not like Thrones, where two factions can be the same faction playing each other. The sides are not even. One player plays Corp, which has the express goal of scoring agenda points, which are cards in your deck, and the other set plays the Runner, which is the express goal of stealing those cards out of the deck by basically seeing them. And making runs around hidden information. So it's a game of hidden information and economy on the basicest of levels, with obviously a bit more variance because of the agendas being places. But I'd say number one, Netrunner is purely an economic game from the basis. Everything revolves around the economy. Like in Thrones and most card games, cards are something you just can't come by. But in Netrunner, you could just draw a card if you want to. It's an action. That's fine. But you have a limited amount of actions. So I think something in Netrunner...
You kind of had a draw cap, you might say.
In a sense, you had a draw cap, but other cards could draw. But yes, you could also deck yourself, which you can do in Thrones too. Well, the Corp can deck it themselves. The Runner can. But anyway, the economic warfare, I think, is what, at least for me, the main staying point of Netrunner. And while it doesn't exist right now in the meta, for a while, winter decks were a bit of a thing, and cards like the White Tree is a bit of choke. So there is a bit of threatening your opponent's economy. And there are, of course, plots like naval superiority, so on and so forth. I think as we have started seeing more money in Thrones, these type of decks have been hindered a bit, but they could still always come back, and especially innovative deck builders coming from Netrunner could perhaps come back.
I was going to say, I think that is an aspect where we have, an analogous thing of maybe half of it in Thrones. Like we've spent a lot of time talking here on the White Book about how the old adage in Thrones was draw equals win, trademark Darryl Lloyd, and how in second edition that shifted. And for a while it was almost arguably like econ equals win. And now maybe it's maybe more 50-50. Econ has really loosened up compared to launch. But I think there's still definitely something to be said for managing your own economics and planning around your moves for an entire round of marshaling your events or ambush. Now your shadows, any of these types of things you want to do. Like you're totally right that the interacting with your opponent's economic game is. Not really quite there, but I think there's definitely a lot of back and forth in planning and maximizing your economic game. And I think the plots, which are kind of, one of Thrones' two claims to fame, give you an interesting way to plan ahead and try to capitalize on that, since you know what, the base income value is that you can have on any turn. Sure, you can have modifiers and that sort of thing, but the gold stat on the plots gives you a lot of ways to try to dictate the flow of your own economy as the game goes. So I think we've got part of that aspect.
No, I'd agree. And I think actually that is part of the argument. So what you're losing in the difficulty of playing with your opponent's econ and your own econ in the gameplay, since the econ resets every turn in Thrones, besides for very niche things like with the long plan being in play, is that deck building is that much harder because deck building determines your economy. Like in Netrunner, you throw in a certain amount of economy cards and you're usually good to go. You do your curve a little bit, so maybe you could afford a little more economy, less economy cards, so on and so forth. But the plots fueling your economy essentially in Thrones makes your economy curve and your plan intertwined more so than it is in Netrunner, I would say. While, of course, there are exceptions to that rule, for the most part, the economy in Netrunner and the deck building is often figured out. Like, when I would play Netrunner, if I wanted to build a Shaper deck and I knew when to pick Shaper to a tournament, I could build it the night before, never play it, and I'd be cool bringing that deck. I couldn't do that in Thrones because you have to figure out what plot is right for this, and does this give enough money but also have a powerful enough effect, and usually those two things are balanced out. So the plot deck really changes the way the economy flows, and it's a much different experience, I would say.
Agreed. Very, very different. Still a lot to consider with the management, just a very different flow to that management.
Yes, I would agree there. Obviously, you don't have the autonomy a click basically being an action, so you can just take a dollar if you want, or you can draw a card if you want, whatever it may be. But also, while at first I thought that would be something very limiting, it makes the resources even tighter in a sense, because these are all the resources you have. You can't just go get one. So you have to care for them even more. So I think it's a different type of economy and resource management, but it certainly is still something. I think, honestly, the closest thing that's almost an analogous thing in Netrunner to Thrones is basically an ID and an agenda. It's almost the exact same thing.
Definitely. So I think that was something a lot of people really identified with in Netrunner. I know that was one of the main things that kind of hooked me and my interest, because Netrunner has been one of my secondary or tertiary games off and on for a while too. The identity just lets you really kind of feel so connected to your deck, and really customize it from like the ground level. Like, my deck will function differently. And Thrones has that as well. Maybe not, you know, as personalized as an actual character as the Netrunner ones were, but you can still be loyal to your general faction, say Lannister or whatever, and really, you know, personalize that deck from the ground up with an agenda. So I think we nail that aspect.
Yeah, that's the thing that's the closest par for par. I mean, I'm trying to think what else is super close. Now that we have Shadows, there is also a amount of hidden information. So as we mentioned, Shadows is a mechanic in Thrones where you could have face down cards that maybe something else, and your opponent has a bit of a guessing game to do and how to play around that. There's a lot of face down information in Netrunner, more so than there is in Thrones with the amount of Shadows in the game now. But it has the same feeling or rich. What could this be? And if it's this, how do I play around this? And vice versa.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we'll really start to nail that analogy more as the Shadows card pool grows. Right now, we've only got the one pack mechanic. So it's arguably like the perfect time for Netrunner players to jump in, right? Like, okay, this is a little bit of a side note on a theory that I had about Netrunner for a while. So if it's something widely discussed in Netrunner circles, I apologize that I never got into it because, again, secondary or tertiary game. But my thought process was that as the card pool grew and the amount of like memorized potential hidden information grew, that would tend to favor corporations because their information was the hidden information, right? So for any one ICE or whatever, you know, if there's three options that could be, that's much more favorable to the runner than if there's 30 options that could conceivably be. So the complexity, I think, really ramped up as Netrunner went. So the point here I'm making is it's the perfect time in Thrones for Netrunner players to jump in. We've only got one pack of Shadows right now. That potential information is as low as it's ever going to be. So now's the time to jump in and grow with it and get used to that ebb and flow. So, and one other thing. I would also argue that plots are very similar. Right? Like in Netrunner, it's hidden information, but you do know the information exists, right? You can see there's ICE or there's an asset or agenda in that server, that sort of thing. You can still see the face down card is there. And Shadows, I think, hits that sort of note even more so than Ambush does, where you're just jumping it into play from hand. But I would also even say plots hit some portion of that, right? That's sort of like you have begun the run in Netrunner, and you know your opponent's going to flip that ice. The question is, what is it and how am I dealing with it? I think in Thrones, the plot game where both of you know you're revealing a new plot, what are they going to do? How are you going to, you know, outguess them at that time? I think that also has a similar flavor.
Yeah, I think, I mean, ambush also is a similar thing where it allows for from hand, which is very uncommon in Netrunner and almost impossible. So if you think of the run like a challenge in Thrones, so you're making a challenge and you have to think, although you know so much about the board, like maybe if you think of it like two pieces of ice to rest, if your opponent has this much money, potentially they could ambush in a burned man, for instance, like in a very basic sense, or they could ambush in this or that or bring something out of shadows. So there still is a risk reward. Like if you make this challenge and you lose, you either have your board knelt out to a certain extent, tapped out of magic terms, whatever you want to call it, or you let them get off this trigger that if they win on defense, like the Shadow Tower, that they can stop another attack. Or if they win on defense, there's a lot of things that you could win on defense and get some type of trigger. So you're risking that, and also you're risking your fight for dominance later on. So there's a lot of things still going on that isn't fully known information and is like the action is happening during this. That's what a challenge is, an equivalent to a run.
You know, speaking of making runs and challenges analogous, I think you're headed super close to another point I was thinking of. I actually think Game of Thrones challenges plus dominance, let's be honest, it's really kind of a fourth challenge, make it the other game I know of most similar to the possibilities of Netrunner, right? If you're playing Netrunner, you've got multiple servers out there, be they centrals or remotes, who knows? But you've got multiple different avenues, different literal directions you could attack at, or that you're defending, depending on which side of the game you're on, right? Game of Thrones having three different challenge types plus dominance is, I think, about the closest any other game gets to that ability to try to juke one direction to get your opponent to fall for the bait so you can open up a different. In Netrunner, you know, maybe you make a run that you plan to bounce off of, you know, HQ because you want them to blow the resources resing that so that they can't afford the next run that you're going to make on Archives, whatever it might be. Thrones, I think, has a touch of that flavor where, you know, say you're throwing out the chump intrigue challenge at them to try to bait them to defend so that it opens up you to be able to get the power challenge through next that you really wanted, or, you know, whatever particular combination that might be. I don't know of any other game that quite gets that close. I mean, L5R has two challenges, what, political and military, but Thrones has more. So it gets closer to having that give and take and back and forth.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, you know more card games than I know, for sure. But it is the same basic idea where you're not going to be able to win them all, right? But you have to choose what you're willing to sacrifice and how you can trick your opponent into falling for what you don't really care that much about winning, but maybe they do. So maybe, like you said, maybe you really don't care that much about the intrigue. You'll take an intrigue win if you can, just like you'll take a random RNDX if you can, but you really care about getting into the remote. So if you do that intrigue jump, they don't block it, you win. You get what would be a free access Netrunner or a free discard in Thrones and an unopposed power. And if they do block it, you win because they knelt at that character and now you can do the other military challenge that you really wanted to win, but they don't have the standing character to be able to defend. So there is still a give and take for sure.
Yeah. Well, we've covered quite a bit of ground there. Were there any other aspects of Netrunner that you think worth it to hit on?
Ecking is an option, and it's almost getting there in Thrones. It was there for one deck for a little while in Netrunner. I don't think anyone particularly liked that deck existing, but it was very good.
What's the space?
And if you're into milling,
trash stuff? That one? Or was it a different one?
So it was Max with DLR, so it had a resource that said if you're tagged, you can use a click to discard top card of your opponent's deck. And it was a resource, so you could trash if you had a tag. But then there was another card, which later got errata, that says every resource costs plus two to trash. And it wasn't unique at the time. So you can make every resource cost like six to trash, gain an extra click, and take a tag with one card, and then spend all the clicks just milling one per click.
Oh boy.
And then you would account siphon over and over. So it was a relatively NP strategy, but it was very good. So if you were into milling, milling is also a possibility in Thrones, I suppose. There isn't anything else planted in my head, and I actually don't think the milling decks in Thrones are very good for the game. But that's another talk.
Yeah, that's a whole different ball of wax right there. Well, cool. I think that's a good talk, and maybe has some interesting perspective for our neighbors over in Netrunner land. We would welcome you with open arms here in Game of Thrones.
I agree with that sentiment. And if you petition hard enough, I would not be upset if you got Michael Boggs to help Danny design too. Or designer Marrier.
Yeah, that is one other thing that I thought of earlier when you were talking about limited resources on the company's end. You know, maybe this is good for the remaining games, that maybe it frees up additional resources that will go toward them.
That's true. Tell Boggs we are the closest game to Netrunner. He is a Netrunner lover through and through. And we want Boggs to join us and make Thrones with Danny and BFFs and whatever else.
Yeah.
I'd love to have two designers on the game, or designer and developer. One of them can do one of each. Oh my God. It'd be like a real game.
We'll see how it goes. Hey guys, so welcome back to our next segment. Of course, I'm still Will, but with me we've got another guest, someone who's a little bit of an old hat at podcasts in general, though I think it's been quite a long time since he has appeared on the White Book. He moved on to, I'm not going to say greener pastures, but I will say the other side of at least one fence somewhere. So, Dodd, why don't you give folks a little bit of insight into your FFG LCG background and what folks may or may not know you from?
All right, well, I'm Dodd Harris, and for the record, I have never been on the White Book. I was on Two Champs and a Chump.
Oh, okay, that's fair.
Multiple times, but since you switched over to the new name, I have not appeared on your podcast, to the best of my recollection. I did, however, do Breaking News, an Android Netrunner LCG podcast for 5 years, almost exactly. Our last episode,
well done.
Our last episode was recorded in January. We actually did record a couple more, but the post was delayed, and then we decided to bring an end to it when they were just getting farther and farther behind, and it wasn't something that all three of us who were doing it were finding sufficiently rewarding anymore. And of course, you know, like 2 weeks after we made that decision, they decided to pull the plug on the game, which I think is part of the reason we're having this conversation. But we did over 60 episodes over that 5 years, some of which were, you know, multiple parters. So the actual count, if you went to download them all, would probably be closer to 70, because whenever they put out a big box, we do two.
Okay.
We did interviews at tournaments. We did mostly reviews of new chapter packs or deluxe boxes. We talked about the state of the game. We talked about the meta as it shifted. We brought a couple of years ago, we brought on a new guy here in town who moved from the meta where the two-time world champion was one of his regular play partners.
Nice.
Really, really, really deep into the game and much, much better than either of us. And I think the quality of the podcast significantly. That guy's name is Scott. And he recently, and that's part of the reason it ended up, we pulled the plug on it, is he moved back to the New Jersey, Philadelphia area in January. We did a yearly tournament called the Chilo City Grudge Match, which came about.
Yeah.
People who don't play Netrunner will not know that about a year after the game came out, FFG did this really cool thing where they did what was called the Plugged In Tour, where they sent actual FFG employees to various stores around the country and had these two-day events where you played against. You had tournaments there for everybody, and then you could play against the FFG employees and get a little prize if you won as a side event to the tournament itself. And they did one up in Chicago, and we went to it, made a bunch of new friends, and there's a card in the game called the Chilo City Grid. And so we decided, that was in like September, October, we decided to start doing a mutual meta event. We were pretty sure the actual Chilo in the Netrunner universe is supposed to be Chicago and St. Louis, but Chicago and Louisville worked too well. Did I mention I'm from Louisville?
I don't think you had.
So we started doing that. Yeah, so there we started. We just appropriated that. So the Chilo City Grid became the Chilo City Grudge Match, and we had it here in the fourth weekend of January every year for the last 5 years. Last four, I've designed a custom card for it, or had, with the help of one of my friends, designed a custom card for it that are rare and valued because they're always cool. At that plugged-in event, I got to play against the original designer, Lucas Litzinger, and I beat him, so I got a signed copy of a card from him. It was pretty neat because whenever he would use that card to kill a player, he would have them sign it.
Right? Okay.
So when I hit his hand one time and I pulled a signed copy of Scorched Earth out of his hand, I was like, okay. And then I hit his hand later and I pulled out one that wasn't signed. I was like, well, now I know you have two. He goes, yes, that is one of the flaws. But I won, so I got a signed copy. So, I met the guy who eventually ended up, until very recently, like 6 months ago, 8 months ago, being in charge of OP. I met him there. We hit it off, got to be friends. And I have just, you know, spent a lot of time playing FFG LCGs. I played Star Wars for a good long while. I played the Warhammer one.
Which one? Okay, yeah, Conquest.
The second.
There was also Invasion. So I wanted to double check. I think Invasion.
We have a marvelous board gaming group here in town. Hundreds of people are in it, and we have an event 12 hours on Saturdays to play board games two times a month that was originally founded by two guys who were looking for more people to play Warhammer.
Oh, wow. With
6 or 7 years ago, and neither of them even comes anymore most of the time. They're too busy. They've got kids and all that, but it grew over about a year, and then a guy came in and said, you know, I'm going to try to help be a host and build this up. Now we have, you know, on a bad Saturday where it's like the summer and everybody's off doing stuff, we have 30 people there.
Oh, that's awesome. So, really awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And that also grew into an LCG group kind of as an offshoot on Friday nights for a couple of years. We had 3 or 4 games. Enough people were playing that we could get together every Friday night and play LCGs. And we played, you know, when I was playing 3 games, 1 week it'd be Netrunner, 1 week it'd be Thrones, and 1 week it'd be Star Wars. And then if we had a fifth Friday, we'd just have a free-for-all. You know, it was great. We had so much going on here. And then, yeah. And then a couple of, you know, just hit speed bumps in the road, slow cards coming out, store owner trying to, store manager at a different store we also played, trying to buy our store, not being allowed to buy anything. So we couldn't get kits for a while. the one problem with our local meta is people won't come play unless they have promo cards to win on a consistent basis.
Gotcha.
So, the LCG night kind of just ended up falling by the wayside, but we still have a pretty vibrant and active Netrunner group. But Thrones, after the reboot, I don't know, maybe 6-8 months, just didn't get enough people buying in. There's just too many games to buy cards for. And then FFG started having a bad habit of killing off their game.
Yeah, I mean, and that was something I was really thinking about. It, you know, they gave us such a glut of LCGs, you know, basically launching a new one every Gen Con. But we haven't heard of anything announced yet for Gen Con this year, and we've had several killed off in the past, well, I guess what, one a year for the past 3 years. They've really whittled the field back down. I'm kind of starting to wonder now if they've realized that, you know, maybe they
cannibalizing their own playbase.
Yeah, yeah, that's always been really bad.
It wasn't difficult to be consistently buying cards for and playing three games when I had people to play those games with at least, you know, a couple times a month. I could get together and know I'm going to get to play Star Wars.
Uh-huh.
Two different stores, so we had off cycles. So if Star Wars was at one store on one Friday, we'd do it at the other store 2 weeks later on a Wednesday. So we, you know, I got to play each game at least every couple of weeks. But once that started to fall apart, and then those games, you know, Star Wars got canceled, and then Warhammer Conquest got canceled, and then Thrones got rebooted, and that was, it was a really wonderful thing. I really liked the changes they made, except for the fact, of course, that with a just a core set and one cycle or so worth of cards, the deck building options are really limited. So it's really hard to get people. I have everything for Thrones first edition.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know sometimes you still pull out your CCG cards and we'll build a deck or do a cube or something, but without a consistent large group to play with, that kind of thing just doesn't happen. So it was very difficult to get people to buy in. So we had a very small Thrones group that carried over, and we just didn't get to play much. And so basically our local group just kind of died out. And I think they just did. And then L5R, we had a bunch of people just insanely excited about it for the first few months, and I haven't seen anybody playing it.
Yeah.
I'm told there is actually an active, you know, at least a handful of people actively playing the game here in town, but I haven't seen it.
It's kind of the same boat here in Springfield. Real big kind of swarm for the launch. Whole lot of buzz. And then it dropped off. I don't see or hear anything about locals playing anymore.
I'll tell you something then. I've never heard you say this on your podcast or in person for that matter, but I suspect from having listened to your podcast for a very long time that you have a similar policy. But I don't we never on Breaking News, we never came out and dogged out FFG. We tried to maintain a good relationship with FFG, and I think I have one. But I do think that, you know, they just overdid it. They brought out too many games and they killed too many, and it's hard to maintain a play community when it's like, oh, I'm going to go spend, you know, $500 on cards, and then they're going to be deprecated. That said, I don't blame them for Netrunner. What little I've heard, and none of it's official, but what the scuttlebutt I'm getting is it wasn't their fault.
So. Yeah, I mean, and when you get into these corporate transactions, you know, sometimes it's really hard to even point a finger and lay a primary blame on any one party. You know, even if it's not really FFG's fault, so to speak, it may not really be WotC's fault either. You know, there's so many things to juggle in these kind of agreements.
Well, what I'm hearing, and this is not official, I haven't heard it from anybody who's in the know, so I don't, you know, nobody's violated an NDA or anything like that and told me the inside scoop. It's just what the scuttlebutt is getting back to me is that FFG wanted to keep the license and tried to keep the license, WotC wanted an absurd price for it, so they tried, and they just they couldn't make it a viable option, so they had to kill it off. And the fact that they brought, you know, they announced a new deluxe box, and, you know, Worlds was scheduled, and all this stuff was, you know, and everything looked fine, and they did the reboot last year, and they hired a new designer who was just getting to do his first cycle on his own without somebody else's cards that he had to go in and. It all suggests they had a medium to long term plan for Netrunner that didn't work out because of So I that all says this, and then of course, you know, now they're doing a Netrunner only Worlds in September.
Mm-hmm.
They have to finish it all by third week of October. Crazy.
Yeah, I don't even know why it's not the end of a month. Seems much easier to account for on everybody's end, but who knows?
That it, who knows? But it doesn't make any sense for WotC to take that tone and that approach unless either there's some kind of merger thing, you know, some acquisition at a much higher level that people are talking about that makes it make sense, or WotC's planning to do something with the game again after FFG rebuilt their brand.
Maybe.
Otherwise, you know, a license from a company that's putting out cards and paying you a license fee is free money. I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Who knows? There isn't a good way for me to know. I'm not privy to that, but I am curious.
Just say again.
Oh, go ahead.
I'll just say again. Nothing that I just said that isn't clearly my opinion can be taken as fact because I don't know. That's just what I'm hearing, and it has plausibility because of the other circumstances.
I love for any listeners here listening to Dodd, I wonder if you can guess his day job.
Yes, I am a lawyer.
But I am curious from a kind of a speculation standpoint here, because I think that this speaks to a concern that a lot of folks are going to have at this point, whether they were, you know, dedicated runners or playing a different game, or, you know, not into LCGs yet at all, you know, in the, will you get into a game and then get attached and then have the rug yanked out from under you, so to speak. And I can understand that fear, but I've been kind of working through that in my head, recently. You know, I hadn't worried much about it with the prior cancellations. But now with Netrunner, it's been on my mind, and I'm kind of curious what you think about the games that are still standing. Personally, I think they're probably in a pretty good place. I mean, the co-op games, Arkham. I mean, FFG is just like recycling art left and right. They've used for other things, like their licensing's got to be a bare minimum to Chaosium. Their costs on that game are like rock bottom. Lord of the Rings is still one of the biggest pop culture properties ever. It's only going to get bigger whenever Amazon does their prequel series. So I don't feel bad about that. I mean, the Star Wars stuff, okay. They did end that LCG, but they're not ending the license entirely, obviously. I think the numbers were just too low and they had too many other Star Wars games to work on.
It's a shame, too, because it was a clever game.
Yeah, yeah. It had some neat ideas. You know, L5R is wholly owned by FFG. So I don't,
is it? I didn't know.
Yeah, so I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon.
Absent the player base collapsing, I don't see L5R going anywhere anytime soon. They just launched.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the new kid on the block. I just, if they're going to, they got to give us no new LCGs for a while.
Yeah.
You know, stop glutting the market and cannibalizing their own players.
Well, because I was thinking also, I mean, Thrones, at this point, just to kind of reassure some people, I don't think it's going to go because it's one of the hottest pop culture properties at the moment, and HBO's actively working on one form of prequel or another, so they're going to keep it in front of folks. I think odds are low that FFG lets that go.
FFG has had a license to do Thrones games for a really long time.
Yeah, the first one launched in 2002, so that probably means they picked up the license in 2000 or 2001, depending on exactly how long production was.
Right, and you know they've got board game, which has been rebooted and is marvelous. I don't get to play it nearly enough. It's one of those games that everybody thinks is a lot longer and more complicated than it actually is, so it's hard to get it. Great, and you know, and they absent another WotC kind of thing, like I think happened with WotC, that I don't think there's any danger that the Game of Thrones card game is going to go. In fact, if I had any concerns about that, they were almost completely removed a couple, 3 weeks ago when I was in a Barnes & Noble with my nephew when he was off looking at Garfield books. And I was wandered, as I always do, through the game section. And they have an entire, like half a set of shelves or nothing but Game of Thrones games. And one of them was the LCG, which stunned
me. Awesome.
I had no idea they were selling the LCG in Barnes & Noble. But if they are, I think it's around for a good long while.
Yeah, that's the core set there. I'm wondering, did you see the news at this point? It's probably been about 2 months back. The news that FFG is going to be doing faction specific starter decks.
You know, I think I did actually. I think I saw a promo for something about that. I didn't read into it, but it's a great idea. Obviously, I mean, people, you know. One way to promote it to the masses, not those of us who are like min-max competitive tournament players, but to the 90% of their customers who are the ones who really pay their bills, is to get people to do, you know, take an L5R perk and get people to have faction house loyalty.
Loyalty.
So you sell them a starter deck for Stark, and then they can go, oh, there's a box just for Stark. Well, I'll go get that. I'll just play Stark.
And I'm hoping it keeps that buy-in aspect that you mentioned before as low as it can reasonably be in the LCG model.
And
now you don't necessarily have to buy three cores and a bunch of cycles, you know. I don't know how competitive these decks will be, but at least you have a complete deck in one, what, $15 purchase.
What would be really nice, and of course I have no idea because I didn't read the article, or you know, I don't even know if the article even said it, but what would be really nice is if you go buy a Stark starter deck, if it has enough, a full play set of anything that would be from Stark in the core set. That would be nice, because then you don't have to go buy six, seven other factions worth of cards that you don't want.
I don't know what the breakdown is yet. They haven't released any lists of what is in the decks, so I'm still waiting to see
that. I doubt they'll do that. It's not their style to get around people who want. if I just want to play Stark in a tournament, I can go buy three starter decks for $45, or they can make me go buy three $40 cores. I know which one they're going to make me do. They are a business.
They are indeed. Well, okay, so aside from the setup of the kind of LCG world at large, even if you haven't been deep into Thrones lately, you have at least played both games a good bit. So I'm kind of curious a little bit about what some of your personal favorite aspects are in the two games, and whether you think there's any connection to some of those favorite things, or if your favorites are very separate and distinct.
Well, I really like deck building, even though I'm not very good at it. I remember one time there was a card, I don't remember what the card was, but the card came out in Stark that I thought made another of a deck model that they had put a bunch of cards into. It was really bad. What was that? What was the Stark keyword in first edition?
Stalwart.
And it was terrible, right?
Left play, it went to the top of your deck.
Right. And it was terrible, but that card came out that lets you draw, I think, when something went. Do you remember that guy?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And there was another card, though, that came out not too long after that. It was like, I think the art had horses on it. I don't remember what the card was, but my theory was that made Stalwart actually a viable model, and I built a deck around that idea, and I brought it to the regional in Springfield, and I've lost every single game and won the Sansa Prize, thereby showing that not only is my theory crafting suck, but my idea that made it. I mean, I didn't even win when I was 0-4. That was the one time I think that Jeff and I ever went to a regional together that he did better than me.
Well, hey, at least you were a stalwart House Stark supporter.
You're gonna die a painful death. So I really enjoy it, but I accept that when I come up with some wacky idea, you know, I'm no Greg who will come up with some wacky idea and then go 6-0 in in Swiss with a deck nobody could ever have conceived of other than him at World, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I do enjoy that part of it, and I really enjoy it now that, you know, when we have an online deck builder that's actually good. So you can, you know, because I used to, when before I guess there was a time when Card Game DB didn't have a very good deck builder, and I would have to do it manually, and I'd pull out, you know, when I build a deck, I go through my cards and I pull out every single card I think might be relevant to it. So I'll have like 250 cards on my coffee table. And then I start the process of winning it down. The first, you know, 150 come out pretty easily, and you get down to like 80, and then it gets hard, right?
Uh-huh.
So I was like, I don't want to think about whether these cards are good or not for this idea until I've got them all, right? So that's much better on a Netrunner DB or on Card DB or whatever you're using.
Well, and
okay, I can throw 267 cards in the thing and then start working with clicking, right? But the games are very different. Once you get sitting down at the table, obviously Netrunner is asymmetrical, and when you play a match, you play both sides. And you said something earlier about people being dedicated runners, and I, you know, you see people talking about that. And I guess if you're a really casual player and you only ever want to play one side, that's fine. But to really truly understand the game of Netrunner, you need to play a bunch of games on both sides, because you don't really know what it's like to be a runner until you've been a corp facing a runner,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. And I've played almost 1,600 games of Netrunner, and I still will be sitting playing a new corp deck going, I have absolutely no idea whether or not this server is safe, you know? And then I'll be on the other side playing runners, like, I have absolutely no idea if I can get into that server. You can't have that. You have to do both sides to really experience it. And then with Thrones, my favorite thing about Thrones is regional, and the way you have to think out your turn before you start it, about what order to do your challenges in, and how you're going to leverage one into the other. And one of the things I loved the most about Second Edition was that it took away the intrigue challenges, just unless you have a specific reason otherwise, had to be the first one. That first edition had kind of, as far as I was concerned, been, I mean, I'm right here, right? The last period of first edition, I mean, it's like, unless you had a specific reason, you did an intrigue challenge first.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's not that way anymore. At least it wasn't straight out of the corset.
In some ways, I think it's drifted back that direction, but I do still think there are more other factors in second edition that make the other two more viable concerns. In first ed, you didn't even have to think about it. It was, you know, 95% of the time intrigue first, no matter what.
Take options out of their hand. So the ability to tweak the rules in such a way that it became less programmatic, less scripted, was to me just brilliant. I was very happy. I really liked them expanding the cost curve, and giving us, you know, more viable economic way model to play the game. But the core thing for me about Thrones is those three challenges and the way you have to decide how best to do them in any given turn to get to accomplish the goals that you have for that turn. That the game, that another other game I've played has that. Netrunner, on the other hand, is very tempo based. A lot of it is very tempo based, and it has, you know, in Thrones, you I presume this is still the case. You put singletons of your absolutely, like, you have two or three, maybe three, unique characters that are core to your deck, and you put three copies so you get them as early as possible, right? And everything else, it's singletons because you don't want to draw dead cards. Still the case, even with the draw mechanic change?
You know, I think folks are going, I don't know. The 3X on core uniques is still very popular, but we are getting enough of the kind of secondary and tertiary unique characters that people can include more singleton copies of those now.
And that's what I'm saying, is that if it's not absolutely essential to your deck, you don't put more than one of it in because you don't want to draw a dead card later, right?
Yeah. Early in second ed, I think folks still played multiples of some of those characters because
they didn't have a lot of choices.
Yeah, but now the pool's deep enough to dial that back some.
Well, a singleton in a deck, as I recall from first edition, was basically like, I'd like to draw this, it'd be great, but there's three other cards that will give me something similar, so I have all of them, so none of them are dead draws. And in Netrunner, it's very different. The draw mechanic in Netrunner is I can spend as much of my available resources as I feel like drawing cards. So singleton, you know, silver bullets, if you will, are a much more viable option. It's more a matter of how many do I think I need for the meta right now, and versus how many other things do I want that I need for my deck idea. So you can do singleton cards and have a lot more power than in other games where the draw mechanic is more restricted. So that's a, it's a different, it's a very different kind of game to play because of that.
I think those are definitely good strengths to be looking at on both sides of that coin. I'm kind of curious from the community perspective, because you brought up the Chilo grudge match that you guys were well known for running. I am a little curious, were fan tournaments of that nature popular? Was there a lot of kind of community involvement and buzz and excitement about that type of thing?
Yes, actually. Chilo was basically the first large scale one that got a lot of, people would drive from long distance. In fact, the first year we had it, the guys coming down from Chicago, we had 12 inches of snow fell on the ground between the time we went to bed and we woke up the next day, and we still had 36 people show up from 5 states. And the guys coming down from Chicago actually got like in a car accident an hour out of Chicago, and they were like, well, we can either turn around and go back or drive on and be an hour late, miss the first round, and we'd rather the day not get worse, so we'll just drive on and go play Netrunner because, that's better than going home and doing nothing even in this car accident. So it was pretty cool. About a year and a half later, a group started a multi-city tournament series called the ANRPC.
I had heard that name.
Pro Championship, I guess is what it stood for. And FFG kind of kept its distance from it and would not work with them on reserving a seat at Worlds. But the thing was, if you won one, or I forget exactly, top three or top two at each one, I forget, something like that. 1 to 3 from each one got an invitation to the finals, which were actually held in Chicago. And then the person who won that got their ticket to Worlds paid for. But because that was like in September and Worlds is in November, you had to have a ticket already, so they basically just paid for your plane ticket. And I managed to get one of those seats in the finals, and it was the weekend of their regional. So I went up and played 2 days in Chicago, which only the people who had invites to the second day, and I kind of backed my way in, because you're only allowed that one invite. Two people who came ahead of me and ours already had invites, so I snuck in. There was one interesting thing about that is somebody had designed what's that website? Everybody put their art on DeviantArt or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was DeviantArt, had designed a whole bunch of interesting IDs for Netrunner based around your ID, like house party drones. They were sending like the files to the organizer in each city, and that person was then printing them out and then taking from the repaying themselves for that expense out of the entry fee. And about halfway through the first season, FFG put the nonsense. They were printing FFG art or something.
Mm.
I was always very careful. Like people, like I said, we designed custom cards for Chilo every year. And I get requests to sell a set. And I'm like, no, I won't do it. I'm not going to ruin my relationship with FFG for $12 or whatever, right?
I think that's an important distinction to watch, to be careful about. Because fan events are extremely popular in Game of Thrones, and it's kind of interesting for me watching this year in comparing fan events so far this year versus regional turnout. And I think, weirdly, the fan events have swung to having higher turnout than regionals. Though if European continental championships are any guide, I think that the big official FFG tournaments are looking pretty solid. But anyway, yeah, staying on the right side of copyright laws with a lot of that fan stuff is tricky. Not everybody's great with that. And those fan events are very popular in Thrones, so that is something I worry about.
FFG is interesting in that regard. Like I said, they stamped down on these alt arts that were being, and I guess it was because they were being given out as part of, you know, an entry fee to an event, even though I don't think the person who was printing them was actually making any profit. But they used some FFG imagery, even though most of the card was art that was, you know, Creative Commons or donated, right?
Mm-hmm.
The guy up there, when I asked about it when I was doing mine, just said, hey, just don't use our stuff, and it's fine. Because I think they like that we do it, but they've got, you know, I'm a lawyer, so I know if they don't protect their IP, then when somebody does something that's serious, they'll lose their IP. Like, you haven't protected your IP, so if you sue this person for really egregiously violating your trademarks, well, he's going to bring in all these examples where you didn't stamp on it. So they're a business. They've got to straddle that line between letting the fans have their fun and protecting their intellectual property. So I always made sure to stay well on the other side of it, because I like having them and I want them. And every year when I printed those cards, I sent like three or four play sets up to my guy and said, here's what's set for you and for whoever else you want to give them to. So.
Nice. Well, you know, I hate to say it, because I feel like we could keep talking about some of these issues for easily another half hour.
But we are well over already.
Yeah, I was going to say this 20-minute segment is already just rolled over to 34. So I hate to say it, but I think we may have to draw this one to a close. But, you know, maybe I can come up with a good excuse to get you on the show again sometime.
Be happy to. I feel like we just scratched the surface of this topic.
I know, right? We can kick it around a little bit, see if we can come up with some other angles that haven't been hit on enough that maybe we could take a look at. So I think that'll be good.
Well, I hope that was satisfactory for your listeners. It was fun for me, and I always pleasure to talk to you, Will.
Yeah, thank you. Hey guys, welcome to another of the segments we're doing this week. A little bit of a different flow for the White Book, but we're gonna have these interviews here with a few different folks to chat some of the big LCG news at the moment. So at the moment, I've got a guest with me who is well known for another game, the Netrunner game that is oh so sadly leaving us. So, Jens, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit and explain your history there?
Well, yeah. So I got into Netrunner pretty close to the start of it. I ended up I had a lot of free time in like the November because my computer just crashed and it's like, well, let's play a bunch of new card games. And at the time I'd been playing really heavily into Thrones. I'd been trying to get, you know, my roommates into playing, and they were like, well, let's try something new from Fantasy Flight. We got this here in Netrunner. We bought two core sets and got really deep into it, which resulted in us playtesting a ton. And I ended up winning Worlds the year following and got really deep into playing the game for about 3 years from there. So,
yeah. So which year was that? Was that 13 that you won?
That was 13. That was 13 that I won.
Okay, nice. And you mentioned Thrones as well. I mean, I know that we played against each other, I think, the final year of First Edition, if I remember right.
I want to say it was the second to last year of
First
Edition. It was close to the end, though. I think we all knew the writing was on the wall at that point.
So how long had you been into Thrones prior to
I've played Thrones since before it was an LCG. I remember I started playing Thrones during, I guess, a little after Winter Edition. Like, that was...
Okay.
So, like, House of Talons, House of Thorns, I remember when those sets came out. I remember when Five Kings came out. And I remember when the game shifted. Honestly, it's sort of a similar feeling from when... both when the game shifted from CCG to an LCG and from when the game shifted from first to second to what Netrunner is right now. Though Netrunner is sadly does not have a successor to follow it.
It's so unique in the gaming world, which is definitely something I want to come back to. But I had a couple other follow-up questions on your history. Are you still playing any Thrones these days with Second Ed?
I have not been playing Second Ed at a tournament level. I played it, like, we have a core set and kind of play it casually, but I haven't gotten deep into it.
Okay. Well, and then the other bit, which might be an entertaining little bit of trivia for some of the listeners, Netrunner's not the only game you've been pretty decent with, right? Haven't you been pretty competitive at some other big name games in the past?
Yes, it's been a while there, but back in, I guess it was 2009, I played on 3 pro tours for Magic the Gathering.
Nice.
Coming in top 32 on the first of those. And I've also... years before that, I had a top 16 showing at a Yu-Gi-Oh! I guess Shonen Jump champion at the time.
Oh.
But so I've played a lot of different card games over the years, and Netrunner is the one I've had the most success with, but not the only one I've had success with.
Yeah, I think we have a little bit of that in common as far as dabbling. Lot of games, though. I think your record is consistently stronger. but I think you would agree that Netrunner is really unique in the world of board games card games, as far as the whole paradigm, like the setup, not being this like kind of fistfight slog between creatures and the economic aspect. Like, there really isn't anything that's going to be exactly like that, is there?
No, and like for a number of different reasons. Like, not only does it have this really unique flavor to it, the Android universe brings a lot to that, but it also has this incredibly unique gameplay that I still have not seen in another game, where you have this asymmetrical nature. You're playing as the runner versus the corp. You know, when I'm playing Thrones, you can have a game that's, okay, the Lannisters versus the Lannisters, and you have similar decks. Maybe you share cards. That's impossible in Thrones. In Netrunner, you're always playing a different match than your opponent.
So is that is the asymmetrical sides to the game, is that one of the main features that drew you in, or were there some other unique aspects that really were your favorites?
I think that's one of them, because that was just such a unique aspect, you know, a unique part of the game, but also the how it uses hidden information and how discovering that changes the nature of things. You have, you know, all card games have, you know, a hand, or, you know, these card games have hands, you know, and hidden information. You don't know what's in your opponent's plot deck. You might be able to guess what plots they have, but that's not a known piece of information you have. But in Netrunner, you know, if there's a piece of unknown information, you can go try to find that out. If you want to see what's on the top of your opponent's deck as the runner, you can go check. It might cost you, and there might be some hidden traps to that too. But the whole hidden information, the bluffing aspect of it, are really big parts of Netrunner to me.
Yeah, and I think that is one of the other things that is so unique about it, and is maybe something that really, well, I should say a kind of parallel side sort of thing, really hooked me about Thrones when I started 20 years ago. Back then, that whole guessing game, hidden knowledge with plots, felt so new to me coming out of Magic. I had never, you know, dabbled in the Netrunner CCG back in, what was that, 94 or something?
Yeah, 94, 95, I didn't play then either.
Yeah, that was a little before my time.
Yeah, same.
You know, I feel like way back when that type of novelty really hooked me. And then it was a really cool feature of Netrunner to see a game later for me, at least, that was like, oh, that's like the whole game, which really blew my mind at first.
Yeah, same idea. I remember the first games I played of Thrones, where after with these plots, it's like, what could happen next? You know, what effects could happen out of there? And then when I started to learn, you start to anticipate, and then there's misdirection to be had there. How many times can I think of a player specifically not including Valor in their plot deck because the opponent's going to assume it exists? And after it's like, oh, well, they're going to Valor. I don't want to overcommit to this board. And it's like, well, that isn't an option for them. But you don't know that until, you know, plot seven, you'll find that out.
Right. Well, and that, I think, kind of leads towards something I thought I'd pick your brain on, because you definitely played through the popularity of Shadows in first edition. And I don't know if you followed second ed close enough to at least know that they just relaunched Shadows for second edition. It just landed like last week.
I saw that. I was very excited about that because Shadows was such a fun mechanic, again, with the hidden information part of it, where it's these unknowns that what could they be?
Yeah, I was curious if you felt that captured at least a sliver of the same sort of feel. I personally think it probably gets closer now than it did in first edition, because they did tweak the Shadows rules, so now it's just an action to pay that cost and bring it out. You're not limited to the start of phase stuff. So you have a lot more flexibility when you can try to trap or surprise people.
Right, and some of the most interesting Shadows cards were ones that tried to trap or respond to something in first edition. That's really good to hear that it is, with that adjustment. Is it still one Shadows action per phase?
No.
Or is, like,
that's been opened up also. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. That also is a big part of it, because I guess for listeners who aren't familiar with that, Shadows actions in first ed were beginning of a phase, one card. So you had, you know, if you were playing a deck based around them, you had to kind of make your choices very specifically. That's cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do agree that change and that dynamic also gives there a lot more choice and the kind of like, a trap sprung element to what you can do with that.
Yeah. Theoretically, I'm hoping, you know, obviously it's no surprise to you that I'm bringing you on here to try and pull some Netrunner folks in that may be a little disillusioned with the end of their game. But I feel like as radically different as Netrunner is from everything else, I honestly think that Thrones offers probably the closest of anything else to some of the type of back and forth play. I mean, it's still going to be different because Netrunner is so different. But I think there's a lot of hidden information. I'm kind of curious what you think about the challenge system in Thrones. Do those multiple paths, do you feel like they have any overlap to some of the back and forth and fainting in Netrunner? Or because it's kind of a more direct challenge, does that still feel pretty separate to you?
It's, I guess, a little from column A and a little from column B. Like there are definitely aspects of it that do work like Netrunner, where in Netrunner you might be making runs as the runner trying to get the corporation to spend resources, and you know that's a feint. You don't actually care about the run. You have a second run you're trying to do, which is sort of similar to what you can do in Thrones, where you make an attack on intrigue, and it's like, well, you know, I want you to overcommit to your defense here, so all of a sudden, aha, my power challenge is in, or my military challenge is in, and I can put to the sword something. So there that element is very much comparable to it, but at the same time, it's distinct from what Netrunner has, as you've said. It's such a unique game. Like with Thrones, I've played the reboot of the Legend of the Five Rings card game as well, and I can feel, you know, the DNA of Thrones there on sort of when you make your challenge, your two challenges in that game, you kind of choose an element on them, which is similar to the military intrigue political on there. But Netrunner, it's like so out there.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely yes and no.
Sure. That's totally reasonable. My next question was going to be, you know, to be fair to the other end of the spectrum and ask a little bit about what sort of things do you feel are not captured particularly well, that there isn't something at least roughly analogous in Thrones.
One of the points that struck me as unique with Netrunner is how free you are in your actions during your respective turns. With the corp having three actions and the runner having four, just to do whatever they deem as the most necessary thing to progress their game state. If you need to dig for a card, specifically, you can do that. If you need to make resources to play cards from your hand, you can do that. If you need to be able to play as many cards as you need, or you need to be taking runs at different areas, you can make that. There's a lot of flexibility to the structure. And that's like, again, most other card games, Thrones included, have this sort of rigid, draw a plot, draw marshaling challenges, dominance. You know, so there's this, you know the structure that a turn in Thrones is going to take. Netrunner can be a surprise as to where you might be going. Like, is this the turn where you go ahead and make your runs that matter? Is that a bluff? Am I going to call it, or do I want to build up more resources and try to move on a different direction? Maybe attack their deck, maybe their hand. So the freedom of choice is something that just I don't see captured in another game. I have seen more when Netrunner was originally released. Its deck building structure was a very unique structure, but it also seems that Fantasy Flight has realized it's a very fun deck building structure where you can take a limited amount of cards from other factions and place them into your own.
Yeah.
I've always been a huge deck builder. That's part of what got me into Thrones in the first place, was how it was the first time I had played a game that, you know, you have your plot deck and your main deck, and it's like, oh, you have to build both of these to synergize with each other. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, no, I think that's a great observation, that no other game that I can think of has as open-ended of a turn structure as Netrunner. If that is one of your favorite aspects, I do have to admit that Thrones and other games do not have that much of an opening. You've got, you know, a little bit in the challenges phase where, you know, you determine your order of challenges and stuff. That'll get a little bit more maybe with Shadows now that they're more open-ended. But like you said, you're still progressing through these very structured phases. And I just don't know anywhere else that has tried to capture something as open as Netrunner was.
Yeah, it's such a unique game, and I'm so sad to see it going. Seeing the announcement last week, I was hit a lot harder by it than I thought. I was just like, oh, this is like, I had been playing this game competitively for years. I haven't played it too terribly much competitively over the last about year and a half, but let me tell you, is there a fire burning in me for this year?
Yeah.
You know, knowing that it's the last, I've got to be there.
I don't blame you, man. And I got to say, looking at the Magnum Opus event kind of breakdown on FFG site, it looks like a great weekend.
Yeah, I'm very excited to be able to play in that. They're trying to go all out for the last event they can, which, you know, that's how you want to do it. I remember being at the last first edition event and how it had the sort of kind of melancholy feel to it. It's the end. Everybody's excited to play.
Yeah.
But it is sad to see it go.
Yeah. It's weird. It's weird. even for me, where Netrunner was just kind of a secondary or tertiary game, none of the other LCGs that have ended have been ones that I have actually really tried to kind of stay up on, and that I did actually play in a few other tournaments in. No, I played some Call of Cthulhu, some Conquest and such, but I never even made that particular step. So it's definitely a sobering reflection. So hopefully Thrones keeps up.
Yeah, I haven't been playing second edition, but I do closely follow it because Thrones is such a important game to me. I saw, heck, I think the biggest thing I saw outside of Shadows was a sort of reprint of House of Dreams. The agenda that's like, and I'm you know, like things like that that are just so, it's like seeing, because there's Thrones has such a big history of all these champion created cards, and seeing them slowly come back is always a really cool thing.
Yeah,
I think it's called was it Red Doors?
House with the Red Door now.
Yeah, House with the Red Door.
Yeah. Well, it's a good time. The pool is at a nice, large spot, I think, large enough to build, but not, I mean, you know, if you were to just sit down and buy everything at once, yeah, that probably still looks kind of daunting. But there's champ decks, right. They've got the starter decks coming soon. I think it's a pretty good time to be getting in and enjoying.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the decks that are like faction specific, I think, are the ones that I had seen that were the most interesting to me as far as like looking at a jumping in perspective.
Yeah, yeah. I think those are going to be awesome. I do have to admit, small conspiracy theory minded thing of mine, I did realize a couple days ago, like, oh, wait a minute. You know, those things are timed to come out in like late July or something. Like, was there a plan there? I don't know. I don't know.
No.
We'll see.
Yeah, I'm excited for Magnum Opus, though. As sad as I am about the end of the game, it's gonna go out with a big one.
Oh yeah, it'll be good. I definitely wish you the best of luck up there come September.
Thank you.
Well, any parting thoughts before we go, or shall we wrap?
It sounds good to me.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining me, gents. It means a lot to have somebody with a lot of experience with both game frameworks. So,
yeah, happy to be here.
Props and slops?
Sure. You know, I'm the worst at this, so I'll let you go on your rants and maybe I'll think of something that I care about.
I've got a couple different things to prop then.
Well, I'll slop losing Netrunner.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Well, one of my props is going to be on the flip side of that. I am at least going to prop Magnum Opus, which appears to be the official title of the final Netrunner World Championship weekend's event. It does look like FFG has put together a really, really sweet weekend for people to celebrate the game as best they can. They've got a bunch of stuff going on with the other games set in the Android universe, just a lot of cool prizes and stuff going on a weekend, but one of which really caught my eye here that it mentions your victory in the one versus many Android Netrunner staff challenges allows you to throw the NAPD's resources against your rivals. So that reads to me that FFG was working on what I still call like a raid deck style thing from the WoW TCG, right? Where one person plays like a boss deck that's busted against multiple opponents. Magic now calls it Arch Enemy these days. To me, that sounds an awful lot like FFG was working on one for Netrunner, and you can play it, you know, whatever test version, whatever state it was at, they'll have it there, which sounds super cool. I love that idea for that world and universe. Plus, the name Magnum Opus, like, that just... It is, I think, too perfect for this kind of event. Plus, it's a very iconic card in the game. So, props to the event, at least. Seems cool.
Yeah, I'm sure many tears will be shed at the event.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a sad time, man. It's a sad time for all runners. That's all I got, I think. Huh? Yeah, trying to think of other things. Got nothing.
Well, I've got another one that I'll throw out there. I'm definitely going to throw a huge prop out to Cloak and Dagger. I thought it would be pretty cheesy for a Marvel show, considering it's on Freeform of all places, but I watched the first episode, thank you Hulu, and it was really good, way better than I expected for a Freeform show to begin with, and just seems like it's going to be a pretty awesome drama with a bit of superpowers. We'll see how it keeps up. It's still got a bunch of episodes left, even though I think this is a shortish season, but go check it out.
I'm glad it actually was decent. That's surprising. Yeah.
Well, other than that,
you don't have that much else either.
What's that?
Not much else either. It's a small props and slops.
Small props and slops. Oh well. Our thoughts are all bundled up in too many other plans. So, yeah. Slight self-prop, maybe. I think it's okay for me to say this. I might edit it out later if I find out it's not okay. But if you're going to Gen Con, go check out some of the John Wick's Presents 7C games that are being run there. They're special Gen Con adventures. Definitely make sure you go check out Con of Cons if there's still tickets available. So there you go. Con of Cons. Definitely check it out in particular.
Sounds good. Props to you, Nationals, and the White Book being featured presence. More fully, thanks and props to yourself, Wulens, for stepping up and saving all of the United States in the Thrones world.
Thank you. I feel a little awkward about that level of propage, but regardless, I definitely hope folks come out and have a good time. Well, there we go. Yeah, I think that left us in the danger zone for sure. So, seems like a good time to close this chapter of the White.